and welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday edition of the Grace Hour. We're broadcasting live here from our studios, which are located at the home of the Greater Grace World Outreach in Baltimore, Maryland. And welcome to today's broadcast, friends. We're going to be looking at one of the minor prophets once again today. Yesterday, of course, we looked at the prophet Hosea. Today, another minor prophet. His name is Obadiah. And we'll take a look at the shortest book in the Old Testament, the book of Obadiah. We do want to remind you, our listeners, that the comments for you to share your thoughts with us are available. Just go to the website, share what your thoughts are on our theme and subject today. And if you have any questions, please just write those questions down. We'll do our best to answer them during today's Grace Hour broadcast. My name is Pastor John Love. Joining us in the studio today, Pastor Schaller, and we're ready to get things started again on this Thursday edition of our broadcast on the book of Obadiah. I guess the first question we could ask Pastor Schaller is, who was Obadiah? We know very little about him, and again, it is the shortest book in the Old Testament, just 21, I believe, verses long. And we know that this vision or this message was given to him from the Lord, and it seemed to concern very specifically on a group of people, the Edomites. At what point did he receive this vision or this prophecy? Well, traditionally, many believe it was referring to the Babylonian invasion of Judah and then the ensuing destruction of Jerusalem, all happening around the year 586 B.C. And I see a connection here, Pastor Charlotte, with the judgment or the curse that may fall upon those, and we're familiar with that Abrahamic covenant where God said, I will bless those that bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And it seemed like the Edomites had done just that, not come to the aid and the support of Israel during this difficult time in her history, but actually in support of those who invaded her land.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the fact that we can do the minor prophets because there's a lot of great stuff in there that we could relate to. I think there are different views about who he was. Little known about him, even the timing of the book, but I like that there was a very popular view that you were talking about after the Babylonian captivity, and the fact that the Edomites were really happy that the Babylonians invaded Israel. They were Judah. They were really happy that the country would be destroyed. And that root of bitterness is kind of like the family feud of the Hatfields and the McCoys. Maybe in Americans know something about like a feud and bitterness and what bitterness can do. Well, the Edomites kind of represent when their descending from Esau, who sold his birthright to Jacob, and it said he despised his birthright. We could say that the people that followed in those generations, Esau's family line, became the Edomite people, and they inhabited the territory east of the Negev Desert there on the other side of the Dead Sea, the Edom and Moab, they're next to each other. So you have adversarial people that were adversarial to the Jewish people. Now, the reason, the whole premise of the Bible is that the line of Abraham and Isaac is a special line. They are like a special race of people that are blessed of God, the Jewish people, people in, later the nation divided north and south. So we say the Israel that we're talking about is the Judaic part. And the Edomites, being adversarial, were delighting in the destruction, the invasion, the destruction of the temple. And they were privy to it and party to it. And the Lord is rebuking them for that. So maybe we could talk a little bit about the feud, a family feud. We could talk a little bit about bitterness and pride. Behind, you know, in the book of Obadiah, we have Edom. The Edomites are very proud, and you see that there in verse 2, 3, 4, and 5. Maybe would you like to read that,
yes,
Pastor?
Again, it writes, "Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen. Thou art greatly despised, and the pride of thine heart hath deceived thee. Thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and though thou set thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down, says the Lord." Those are powerful
words.
Couldn't
get more clear. Now, let's do the context. You have the promised seed, Isaac, and centuries later, you have Israel as a nation. Then you have Esau, Jacob's brother, and that line, and you have the nation of Edom, or the Edomites, the people group on the east side, the red. Edom means red. It's the red color of those mountains from the ground. Have you ever seen red earth? Like you see it in India, in Africa too. You had a reddish pink, reddish tone to the ground. And if you look at the mountains, there in the east part, you know, from Israel looking east, you see they're reddish. So Edom lives there in high in the mountains. And there's when you are secure and safe high up in the mountains, you do feel secure. And you might even say, nobody will bring me down. Nobody can bring me down. So let's talk about that, Pastor. We were talking earlier about the United States of America. You could say great our military. We could say we put a man on the moon. We could say we have an incredible economy. We could say we have security and safety and so on. But what?
It could all come crashing down in a moment.
It's not funny.
I know, and it's very serious.
Laughing about it.
Well, it's just because it's the truth. And I think sometimes we look at nations and we think, oh, this is the most powerful nation. You know, we think of the Roman Empire and it lasting for hundreds of years. And yet, you know, you look back now in history, there's nothing left to it but rubble.
Yeah.
The same thing can happen to a nation that can happen to a person. And you brought out about families, these long-lasting family feuds. You referred to the Hatfields and McCoys. Before we came into the booth here today, I wrote that name down, the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Did?
Yeah, because in America, we think of that the generations of the war.
Do you
that
know
on.
About it in
I,
any
I'm not
detail?
That familiar with it, but okay. I'm aware that it went on for generations.
Yeah, 60 years. I did look at it. I mean, just online, you know, I can share a little bit. But around the time of the Civil War, in some part of a corner of Kentucky and West Virginia, by the way, Virginia split during the Civil War because one was on the side of the North and the other the South. So we have Virginia, not West Virginia, Virginia splits to Virginia and West Virginia. Okay, so, but they, you know, poor people in the mountains, and nobody really knows how it started, but maybe a killing of a pig, you know, maybe somebody stole a pig and from the other family. These are Irish and Scottish descent, so that's such a nerve in your
that
life.
That makes perfect sense.
Now we know why there was a feud that went for 60 years mm-hmm. and 109 people killed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they were killing each other, mm-hmm. and that's how deep it ran. The pride of the family, mm-hmm. right?
How does it stop? If because of that pride, you know, you kind of think, well, who's going to take the high road? And the only answer to that question is the one that's willing to take the low road, right?
Yeah.
Humility.
Let it forgive.
Exactly, exactly.
Forgive. Humility, yeah, yeah. yeah.
And apparently the Edomites, you know, their attitude was, we're untouchable. We hide in the clefts of the rock. No one can bring us down.
Yeah.
But when you make that kind of a statement, and we were speaking earlier about, you know, the Titanic, it's like, so many people.
The unsinkable ship.
The unsinkable ship. But so many people, they have a Titanic mentality. You know, I'm just cutting across the waters of life.
Yeah.
Nothing can stop me. Nothing can get in the way of what I want to do or where I'm going and what my goals and aspirations are. And then out of nowhere, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the iceberg. You know, and I think that that's, it just, is a picture of life. Pride always precedes destruction.
Okay.
It always comes
pride
before
comes
destruction.
Before a fall. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Always.
Mm-hmm. You know, it says here, let me read it. It says, I will make you small among the nations. I think you need... We don't know them by that name anymore. Virtually, they're gone. You know, they that's part of Jordan, the state of Jordan. You know, and it's over. Okay, so you are great. The pride and arrogance of your heart has deceived you. Now, that's a solid statement of fact. That the pride and arrogance of your heart has deceived you. So we get blinded. 1 Timothy 3 speaks about how pride is like a smoke screen. I can't see clearly. It deceives us, the blindness of our own heart, who live in the clefts and lofty security of the rock. That's the geography there, the topography, and their dwelling place is high, who say boastfully in their heart, who will bring me down to earth? Who, you know, how will that happen? So there is a boasting in the human nature. Remember Muhammad Ali? What would he be saying? Like, I am the greatest.
Yeah, or all what, the time.
All the time.
All the time.
And though you set your nest on high like the eagle, though you set your nest among the stars, and that's like hyperbole, right? Mm-hmm. Like even beyond, I will bring you down from there. So how would you apply that to a person's life, Pastor?
I think that the pride is, I think Pastor Stevens used to refer to it as the monster sin. The scripture even tells us that God actually resists the proud. The proud that live their lives independent of God, but even pride that can be find its way into the heart of the believer. It's possible that you can be one of God's children, but at the same time, because you have allowed pride to creep into your heart, you could be resisted by God. Mm-hmm. But only grace is available for those who humble themselves before God. And if there were ever a time that we, as a nation and as individuals, as believers, need the grace of God, I would say it is now. Because the last thing any believer would want to have happen in their lives is to be resisted by God, where he actually sets himself against us to break us so that humility will be found in our hearts. And I just, these long-standing feuds, they can happen in families today. they do happen in families today. There's a lot of alienation.
Why are you bringing up my family?
I mean, even especially during holidays, you know, yeah, when you talk to some families, are you getting together? No, we don't. We don't spend time together. We're, you know, alienated from each other. And this goes way back. And even Jacob and Esau, there was a time where it looked like they had buried the hatchet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not last.
No, it didn't.
It did not last.
No, it did not. No, that's a very good. There's something in Esau that cannot be settled without God.
Mm.
You know, it's like Saul and David. I was reading last night, 1 Samuel 18. I counted like 8 or 9 times when Saul, he could not control himself. He just wants to kill David.
Mm.
And his son, Jonathan, is interceding and just saying in chapter 19, then it goes into 20. I mean, there's 18, 19, and 20, those chapters. 1 Samuel 18, 19, and 20. Just count them. How many times Saul and the wrestling that he had in his heart regarding the issue.
Mm.
And he just couldn't settle with it. He would flip-flop. Mm. You know, he would. He just went back. And then he was cursing his son, was interceding for David. And he called him. He was very angry. He exploded. Remember when David, there was a feast, like a couple-day feast, and David was supposed to be at the table. And then Saul said, where is David? And Jonathan said his family had a sacrifice in Bethlehem, and his brother called him and so on. And then Saul just burst out cursing Jonathan and saying, don't you know that this man is going to take the kingdom away from you? And when he went nuts on it, you know, and he couldn't control. So in a similar way, you have Jacob and Esau. They are not reconciled deeply.
Right.
But Esau does behave, and at the same time, would you trust him if you were sleeping in the same room as him?
Probably not. It's true.
I mean, I think I'll stay another place. You know?
Yeah.
What?
It's true. But I think it has to do with the statement that you just said, that there's something in Esau that only God can settle.
Yeah.
And that's true. But pride keeps people from giving God that opportunity. It's the one thing. I mean, people can struggle with sinful habits and problems and troubles in their lives. But when pride finds its way into a person's heart, it's almost like God can't penetrate it until there's humility.
Oh, loaded.
Mm.
That's loaded.
Yeah.
That's big. But the proud person has a hard time detecting pride in themselves. You should have some little, you know how you have a little meter to like read your blood pressure or your temperature and so on. You need something to be like saying, hey, you know what? You got bad breath. You know, somebody will tell you, hey, you know, here, you have a mint, okay? You know, all right. So you don't know you have bad breath, okay? You don't know that you got COVID-19, you know? You don't know that you have an infection. You don't know this, but somebody else might tell you. But you may not believe them. And in the same way, you have pride, but it's very hard for maybe you to realize that, you yourself. And then maybe a person could tell you, or how you behave in these circumstances would be an indication that you actually hate your brother and your sister. You know, you actually hate them. So that should be an indicator.
Yeah. But that's the nature of pride. It is blinding, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You can't see it. It's like, I think it's Paul wrote to the Galatians, he says, if any man thinks he's something when he is nothing, he deceives himself.
Mm.
Pride can deceive you. It can mislead you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened with Esau and Jacob. It just, God was never able to break through. He did break through with Jacob. He broke him.
Yes, he did.
Through in many different ways. I mean,
yes, he did.
It's a good thing. You could almost say it's a good thing when you finally wrestle with God and you walk away limping because it's God's way of saying, I had to do that to you so that I could reach you. That did not happen with Esau.
Right. And Edom is in the mountain secure, but I will bring you down. You know, how well, invading army, economical collapse, children are leaving, any number of things could happen to a nation that would bring them down. Now, it does draw our interest to think of people that are in small countries. Like, I've lived in two countries that are relatively small, like Finland is a small population, and then Hungary, also small. One is like 5 million, one is 10 million people. I mean, those are... That's like the size of a city in India, you know, a village in India.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so they're small, but they it doesn't matter. But if there is a spiritual revival or presence of God because of the Christian faith, the presence of God in the country and some spirituality, then it can be a very peaceful place. Education, interaction, social community, love. The country could have a blessing on it. Contrarily, if I'm worshiping a false god, a false concept, and there is also the absence of humility, there's not any spiritual revival, there's not any brokenness, then there may be like serious problems in that country. So our prayers as believers is that wherever I live, may God bring his blessing on the country and not bring us down to a very bad state. And there are countries like that, North Korea, very oppressive, evil, tyrannical leadership. And you just have to have sympathy for these people. So Edom, Obadiah, the prophet Obadiah, is saying to a neighboring country, I'm going to bring you down. And eventually they disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said practically about people will suffer for the way they treat others. Practically speaking, it's the laws of sowing. If we sow to the flesh, will of the flesh reap corruption. If we sow to the Spirit, will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. So the way we treat other people, our relationships with other people, when we take the high road, which is the road of humility, we accept the wrong. We say, okay, it's my fault. What are we seeking for? We're hoping for reconciliation. We want to, you know, bridge the gap that's been created between ourselves and others. But if we don't treat people that way. And I'm not talking about just living according to the golden rule. I'm talking about living a spirit-filled life and bringing to people what God wants them to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And we live that way, then we'll reap where we've sown. But if we live the other way, like the Edomites did, as you said, they've disappeared. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
They don't exist anymore.
Yes. Yeah, as a nation. Mm. It's true. In distinction to Israel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Matthew 25 is, you might say, well, that's ancient history. Well, Matthew 25 is not ancient history. And that's when you care about the Jewish people, feeding them, if they're in prison, visiting them, not identifying with them. But in Matthew 25... they said, where have we, you know, if you've taken care of these, then you have ministered to me. Wherein have we ministered to you? In that you have taken care of my people. Mm. And this is in the tribulation period when nations will be judged by how they related to Israel in the tribulation period.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. So it's not only Obadiah is an ancient book for, 600 BC, but it is a message for all of us all the time. And that is, how do you relate to Israel?
Yeah.
And in our country, because we are a Christian country, we have a very favorable position toward Israel and care about blessing them, praying for them, and being available to help them.
Mm. And I think that we are very careful when it comes time to cast our votes in national elections to see where those candidates stand in relationship to Israel.
Yes.
I mean, that's a big factor. I know it is when I go to vote. Well, what do they think of Israel? How are they treating Israel?
Mm-hmm.
What's their posture towards that nation as we move into the future? That means a lot.
Yes, it does.
Especially to us as a nation.
Yeah, because Genesis 12:3, if you bless Abraham, then you'll be blessed. If you curse, you'll be cursed. So we'll go with God on that one.
Yeah. And it's not a coincidence, as you just mentioned in Matthew chapter 25, that those are the two words that are used in that judgment, bless and curse.
Yes.
So you just see that this Abrahamic covenant is still in play.
Right, right.
Incredible.
Right.
Well, as Obadiah, again, is giving this vision, this prophecy about the invasion, the Babylonian invasion of Judah and the destruction of Jerusalem, he also gives us this great assurance that, you know, Israel's enemies ultimately will be defeated and God's kingdom will be established on their behalf in their land, mm-hmm. which is a great promise and something that is yet to come. But we said on yesterday's broadcast, we were talking about the prophet, the minor prophet Hosea, talking about, you know, the indestructible Jew. No matter what, you know, mm-hmm. if Pharaoh tries to limit their number, he's not successful in the book of Exodus. If Nebuchadnezzar wants to put them in a fiery furnace, they're not mm-hmm. going to perish. And you could just go down through their history, you know. Haman wants them, he wants the gallows built for them, but they will not hang on those gallows. You could just go down through history and you realize that the Jewish people have been chosen by God and they're going to be protected. And ultimately, he's going to deliver them, their enemies will be defeated, and he will establish their kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there's no question about it. Anybody that would really study it out, and I think there should be a branch of theology called Israelology, where we have eschatology, we have our different branches where we have study, and Israel is in itself a whole field of knowledge of study that really would help a believer understand that God is all about it. He's all over it, and he's the one that's saying, you want to believe in me? Watch and just follow, not one episode, but many through history where I preserved them, I kept them, and I am with them. Ultimately, I'm against them, like in a family sense, like Dad has problems with his family, but in the community, looking at the family, they would say, yeah, there's something there. So there's a blessing, and then God does have issues with Israel, for sure.
Yeah.
But still, he cannot forsake his people, and he's made a covenant with them, and he will be loyal to them all the time.
And Paul, he carved out a good-sized portion when he wrote his letter to the church at Rome, the 9th and 10th and 11th chapters, he really focuses on the nation of Israel
mm-hmm.
and tells us really what God is doing in this present church age. And I love the fact that he brings out, as he explains this portion of Scripture, he says, you know, if God has temporarily shelved Israel as a nation, and he says that if the casting away of them results in the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be?
Mm-hmm.
But it will be like life from the dead. That's a profound statement that he makes.
Yes.
Because in other words, Israel's rejection of their Messiah Christ has resulted in the salvation for the Gentiles as well as individual Jews. But that's with their unbelief.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when they believe God? Wow.
Well, what will happen is they will govern the world. You know, the Jews will govern the world with the Messiah. And the center of the world will be Jerusalem. And the nations will send up delegations to Jerusalem on a yearly basis. And what these people are ordained of God to do is basically govern. And yet there's another branch of governance, and that's the church. So the Jewish leadership in the millennium will have a governmental authority over nations during the millennial reign. But then we will have authority over all of it with Christ. Christ will have all authority. And then they will in an earthly way govern on the earth, and we in a spiritual or heavenly way will govern with Christ on the earth.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And all of this is, we read it in prophecy, and Paul reminds us that all of those covenant promises that God has made to Israel, they will come to pass. They will be fulfilled.
Mm.
There may be some temporal blindness and, you know, a national unbelief at the present time, but when they are restored, their most glorious days are ahead of them during the kingdom age.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you look at Obadiah, and would you could say a few more things about it, where usually the pattern in the prophets is the introduction and then the rebuke, the instruction that follows, and then usually there is some reference to the day of the Lord. That's the millennial reign. That's actually two parts. One, the bad part, the tribulation, and then the millennial reign of Christ, the return of Christ. So that starts in verse 15. Mm-hmm. For the judgment day of the Lord draws near, and all the nations, as you have done, it shall be done to you. Your evil dealings will return on your own head, because just as you, Edom, drank on my holy mountain, so shall all the nations drink continually, one by one, of my wrath. Yes, they will drink and swallow and become as though they had never existed. But on Mount Zion and Jerusalem there will be deliverance for those who escape. This shall be holy, and the house of Jacob shall possess their former possessions. All right, so just to say that you have the day of the Lord, you have the good part of it, the millennial reign, and then you have the tribulation period, and then you have this judgment on the Edomites, and then you have this amazing blessing that comes down on the house of God, the house of Israel, the Temple Mount, the new one from Ezekiel 44-48, the presence of God, very strong in the millennial reign. Like, I'm very happy about that, very exciting about that. So the Edomites are being told that even though you have rejoiced in the destruction of Jerusalem, you will be brought down, and Jerusalem will be the center of, like, international activity.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this found in the little book of Obadiah in the Old Testament. So I think we've given our listeners a pretty good overview of the book. It's pretty exciting when you stop and think about it. There's a lot of practical things that we can draw away from. And I think the biggest one for me is just, got to watch that pride.
Yeah.
Got to be careful that it doesn't find its way into our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing we would ever want for any believer is to be resisted by God. But he gives more grace to those who humble themselves.
How would you describe humility?
It's not a low estimate of self. It's more of a divine estimate of self, the way God sees us.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of puts it in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever we start to think too highly of ourselves, the scriptures remind us, you know, that all flesh is like grass. The glory of man is like the flower of the grass. Mm. Grass withers, flower fades away.
Yeah, thank you. What comes to my mind is like we are so filled with our opinions. We are filled with ourselves. We have a lot to say. We have got a lot to talk about. We have got a lot to represent, defend ourselves. We have a lot of our opinions. So what comes to mind is Ezekiel saw a valley of bones, and the Lord said, "Can these bones live?" And instead of Ezekiel giving his opinion, you know, which would be, you know, educated guess, okay, my educated opinion is no. These bones will not live, you know. And the Lord, but Ezekiel is humble. I like this idea of humility. It's waiting on God. It's reserving all rights to him. It's like he's surrendering my life to him. Like a humble man, like, I'll never be a preacher. I'll never go to a Bible school. I won't go to a church. I'm not, you know, and they are filled with that, their whole thing, you know, of them and what they say and what they think. Humility is surrendering my rights to myself over to God and being quiet and listen to him. And Ezekiel said to God, "O God, thou knowest," you know, "can these bones live?" And he's saying, "Oh God, you know." Mm. And then God gave him the honor, said, "Ezekiel, prophesy to these bones." And then he started to speak to the bones, and they started to move, come together, and they lived, and flesh went on the bones. And it was a picture of Israel coming back after the dispersion. So come on, let's be careful with this and not be so filled with ourselves.
Amen. And on that note, we'll wrap up today's Grace Hour broadcast. Friends, thank you so much for joining us and listening. We have one more program dedicated to the Minor Prophets that's coming up on the Friday edition of the Grace Hour. We hope you'll tune in then. Until tomorrow, may God bless you.